It's the Rokan Show, right here on 720 WGN. Richard Roper is stepping into the studio.
Stepping in.
Yeah, because he's got a story, which freaks everybody out here.
What did I do?
I don't understand what you... You told me you were doing this a couple of... Like about a week ago, you told me about this. You said that you're writing this column for the Chicago Sun-Times, which you've been appearing in for the last three decades.
That's true.
And it's about the best action Christmas movie, because everybody credits Die Hard for being the best Christmas movie.
Yeah, you know, that debate has been going on, I think, like for a decade, right? You know, right around this time of year, you'll see on social media, Die Hard is a Christmas movie, Die Hard is not a Christmas movie. They even asked Bruce Willis, and he said it's a Bruce Willis movie because that's how Bruce Willis rolls. And Die Hard, you know, it is set during the holiday season.
Right. It's a holiday party. It's a Christmas party.
It's Nakatomi Plaza, 1988 Christmas party, which I always thought was kind of strange, too, because, yes, it's a Japanese-owned company, but it's based in the headquarters here in Los Angeles, and all the employees are American, and they have held the party at 8 o'clock on Christmas Eve, which seemed to be not the right thing to do to the employees. So the character of Holly McClane, right, John McClane's estranged wife at the time they're separated, she's got the housekeepers at home with the kids because it's Christmas Eve and she's got to go to the company party.
You know, but let me just take you back to the 1980s and why they were doing it like that. They were doing it in the 1980s like that because there was this whole anti-Japanese buying us and they are our masters moment going on in the 1980s.
And I guess those Eurotrash terrorists led by Hans Gruber didn't care about the holidays.
Right.
So obviously it's set during the holidays. Some people say it's kind of a Dickensian story, Die Hard. You know, family man gets redemption by saving the family. Maybe. But the real late 1980s Los Angeles set action franchise kickoff movie that is a Christmas movie is Lethal Weapon, which came out the year before Die Hard. Die Hard was 1988. Lethal Weapon was 1987. Mm-hmm. And for people who know, of course, it went on, you know, both movies went on to, you know, become huge franchises. And Lethal Weapon, we've got Mel Gibson, who plays Martin Riggs. He is a cop on the edge, as they like to say back then. He's really on the edge because his wife, he's lost his wife. He has nothing. He's suicidal. Some say he's actually just absolutely crazy. And then the counterpart is Danny Glover's Roger Murtaugh, who turns 50 at the beginning of the story and is a family man, you know, who's been married for 25 years, has three wonderful children. Their house is decorated with Christmas decorations. Now, let's just early on, you got the classic scene, and they also, this is the movie that kind of invented the, pioneered the wailing sax soundtrack, which then was in every action movie for 20 years. So early on in the movie, here's, you know, Martin Riggs, the Mel Gibson character, contemplating suicide.
I miss you. Victoria. Hey, that's silly, isn't it? I'll see you later. I'll see you much later.
The guitar there, too, of course. So essentially at this point, Ro, Lethal Weapon becomes It's a Wonderful Life. Mel Gibson's Martin Riggs is contemplating suicide.
Mm-hmm. Everything's going wrong for him. Yes. He's on the edge.
And then he's partnered up with, at just the nick of time, who comes up but his guardian angel, Roger Murtaugh, who shows him that it really is a wonderful life. And if you watch this movie, you look for the visuals. Like, again, Die Hard, there's Christmas decorations. But in Lethal Weapon, the Christmas decorations are strategically placed throughout the film. There's a certain plastic Santa that you see on the roof of almost every house, including a house that explodes one time. Danny Glover's character almost always wears a red tie. Mel Gibson's character always wears Christmas red, shirts, button-down shirts and sweaters. Darlene Love, who plays Murtaugh's wife, the great singer as well, she's always in red. When you see the Murtaugh home, Christmas lights, Christmas stockings, a ton of Christmas cards. Remember how people still like to do this? You put up all the Christmas cards by the chimney, the stockings hung by the chimney with care. And then, of course, you go to Mel Gibson's home, and it's a trailer by the beach. There's no sign of Christmas, except for the Bugs Bunny Christmas special that's playing on the TV in the background when he's considering suicide. So there's all these constant references. Then there's a scene, Gary Busey, who plays Joshua, which is an old Hebrew biblical name, but it's actually kind of ironic because Joshua was a prophet and a man of faith, whereas this Joshua is a psychopath. he enters Murtaugh's home, and he wants to kill everybody. And what movie's playing on the television, even though there's nobody in the house? A Christmas Carol.
Good morning, sir. Tell me, what day is it? What day?
Day of Christmas!
All right. Shot the TV there.
More of the explanation. And I just this, I got to tell you, is a great argument that you could start at your Christmas party. This is a good... Richard Roper's giving you a bunch of ammunition here. We'll continue on with this. But first, Jen DeSalvo is going to tell us what's happening on the roads and in the skies.
Life after combat. A Marine veteran shares his continuing battles. An intimate portrait from the home front tonight on WGN-TV News at 9.
Now, this is the opening song from Lethal Weapon. Richard Roper is here. He's written a column in today's Chicago Sun-Times that articulates the point that Lethal Weapon is, in fact, the best action Christmas movie of all times, not Die Hard, as so many people have tried to argue.
That's right. Die Hard is a Christmas movie. I'll give you that. Lethal Weapon is a Christmas story. The actual plot is the Christmas season is an actual catalyst. They make jokes and references, and, you know, there's ho, 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 I have a machine gun, the scene in Die Hard. But it's not really a Christmas story, whereas the entire arc here, and Christmas is constantly referenced. And they have these all these kind of, when you look back at it, you know, pretty obvious touches. The first time we go to the police station, where Riggs and Murtaugh are employed with the LA, as LA PD cops, and Murtaugh's a sergeant, the coppers are practicing for the choir. Apparently, there's a cop choir, and they're singing Silent Night. And we've got a scene here. You can kind of hear them working on their carols in the background as Riggs' boss tells him about his own little particular Christmas moment.
You know, Roger, you're way behind the times. The guys in the 80s aren't tough. They're sensitive people. They show their emotions when women are like that. I think I'm an 80s.
How you figure?
Last night, I cried in bed. So how's that?
Were you with the woman?
I was alone. Why do you think I was crying? Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. That was the Danny Glover character there. So, and you can hear in the background, the first Noel. So, you know, they didn't just do the kind of poppy... secular songs. There were like all these, Silent Night, the first Noel, the parallels to A Christmas Carol, It's a Wonderful Life.
I wonder why you never thought of this before.
Because you were too busy digging, first of all, Mel Gibson had, the giant big 80s here. It looked like he was in the Bengals.
Right.
It was one of his, he'd already done some good stuff, but this was the movie that made him, at the time, the biggest star in Hollywood, probably.
You know, I think the arc of Mel Gibson's career is fascinating. Because when you saw him in stuff like this in the 1980s, when he first sprung to prominence in the United States, there was something so urgent about him.
Mm-hmm.
There was something.
Yes.
You were drawn to him because he seemed tough and vulnerable and just nuts.
Many of those parts, probably most famously in Braveheart.
Yeah.
And directed Passion of the Christ. There, he clearly was, obsessed with that kind of, on the edge, in some cases, suicidal, super violent stuff. And, Lethal Weapon is a hard R movie. The opening scene there, the girl, she snorts coke, she gets on the balcony topless, and she jumps to her death, and it's all shown in graphic detail. It is a hard R movie, but it's a warm-hearted Christmas story nonetheless. And then, you gotta remember, too, there's this torture scene in Lethal Weapon when they capture, remember, they kidnap Murtaugh's daughter. Tracy Wolf plays the teenage girl. She's been kidnapped by the horrible, evil terrorist thugs. And then they capture Martin Riggs and the Mel Gibson character, and he is tortured in ways that you rarely see even these days on film. They've got him tied up. He's got water all over him. Then they kind of hit him with the electric shocks. And he, of course, manages to escape. But even when he's rescuing everybody, he finds time to make a joke with a biblical reference.
Let's do what one shepherd said to the other shepherd.
What?
Let's get the flock out of here.
Okay. Yeah. Exactly. It's like, this is no time for jokes.
Okay. And, all right, so what you're saying is that Lethal Weapon is A Wonderful Life.
And at the very end, it's almost more of a Christmas carol, because through this kind of overnight experience, the Mel Gibson character of Martin Riggs really becomes to understand. He becomes a better person. He becomes less cynical. And just like Ebenezer Scrooge at the end of A Christmas Carol, he shows up at the Cratchit home, and they invite him in for dinner. And he's, you know, joined by the family. That's exactly what happens at the end of Lethal Weapon. He shows up at the Murtaugh home. He even has the bullet he was going to kill himself with. He was saving the special bullet. He has it wrapped in a red velvet bow as a present to demonstrate that he's never going to kill himself. Now he's learned. He's been saved. And then they cue the final credits and I'll Be Home for Christmas. So it is the most Christmas of all Christmas movies. It's more a Christmas movie than A Christmas Story. Not really, but close enough. So Lethal Weapon is a Christmas movie, a Christmas story. And if you watch it, you notice the constant visual cues. And a lot of the, even the lettering where it says everything must go. Mel Gibson's character is in a store where it's going out of business. Everything must go. Just like he's thinking everything must go. I'm suicidal.
You know, I've probably seen that movie on USA Network 30 times. You know, at some point, you know, you're watching, turning on it, and you stop on it. And none of this ever occurred to me.
Now you'll never see it the same way again, whether you like it or not. And yeah, look for the plastic Santa that's on the roof of several homes and even in the window of the neighbor's home watching the final confrontation. It seems to be the same plastic Santa.
Well, I do. I remember it blowing up in the house, the big house explosion.
There's a house that blows up. Yeah. There's several houses that are destroyed. But again, the house that survives all the attacks, of course, is the Murtaugh home. Even though, it, you know, cars crashes into it and there's machine guns and bullets flying everywhere. At the end of the movie, they're still in the home, even though it's undergoing super repairs. And, of course, Danny Glover's character, Roger Murtaugh, has a boat and wants to become a fisherman or a fisher of men.
Oh, boy. Will. Yeah. Hey,
yes, sir.
Is he still nuts? I mean, where are we right now in the pantheon of his
Mel Gibson or Gibson. Martin Riggs' character?
Mel Gibson.
I think he's still pretty intense. But,
and he just did another movie, right? He's had a resurgence.
Yeah, you know, because it's interesting you mention that because we talk about, you know, the various actors and major players in Hollywood that have been ostracized and are never going to come back, in some cases probably deservedly so. But for some reason, even though there's all that horrific audio of Mel Gibson out there, and other allegations, you know, he's been at the Golden Globes, and he seems to be, at least by most of Hollywood, they're like, okay, he can make money. But he still, you know, he built his own church, and he still believes that the, you know, the new Catholic faith is way too liberal, so he believes in the priest turning his back to the congregation and doing the mass in Latin.
Yeah. There's a, yeah, and his father was Mel Gibson's from Australia. Many people do not know that.
Yes.
I sounded like the president when I said that. A lot of you don't know that. But and his dad was kind of an infamous character there as a sort of a religious bigot and cultural bigot.
The Holocaust denial thing and a lot of other, you know, dicey propositions.
Seems like there might, you know, and when Mel got to the United States, he wasn't exactly, you know, he was becoming a big Hollywood star, but then the bigger his star rose, the more he started sharing some of his personal beliefs with people, and people got a little bit offended. Yeah. He was some anti-Semitic stuff, and then there was the crazy recorded telephone conversations with his, I believe, and which is so interesting, Ukrainian girlfriend.
Yes, the mother of his newborn, who kept saying, you need medication, she kept telling him, and she was right. And the stuff is horrific. Crazy stuff, man.
That is some of my favorite celebrity gone bad tape of all times, when he's on the phone and he can't believe the fight that he's having with this woman. But now it turns out, you see, you can turn it around. There is redemption. The only guy, by the way, who's not coming back is Harvey Weinstein. He's the only one not coming back.
Kevin Spacey's not coming back either. I mean, talk about, you know, in Hollywood, it was interesting because you and I were talking about Baby Driver recently, and Kevin Spacey, one of his many great performances as, like, you know, the guy that kind of hires this getaway driver, and, you know, that's just, you see what a great actor is, but I don't see him coming back.
Nobody's casting him.
They replaced him in that one movie. They reshot the whole film.
Right, just to get it out in the release date.
Yeah.
All right, speaking of movies, Golden Globes are out. We're going to talk a little bit about that with Richard Roper. We'll take your phone calls at 312-981-7200. And we've got the news coming your way from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, and that's right around the corner.